Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Future of Business Energy podcast for Empower Business Solutions Energy HQ. In this podcast, we'll be talking policy, specifically the Energy White Paper, which is expected this autumn. The government also recently announced it will publish a full net zero strategy in the run-up to COP26 next November, as well as a number of additional policies, including a hydrogen strategy. But what does this all mean for business? To hear directly from the voice of business, we are delighted to welcome James Diggle, Head of Energy and Climate Change at the CBI, to hear more about what they want to see in forthcoming policy announcements and what they believe the roadmap to net zero should be. We're joined also by Ben Spry from Empower Business Solutions to discuss our recent report, Your Business Blueprint, The Road to Net Zero, which asked almost 100 businesses what support they would like from the government to help them realise their sustainability goals. So thank you both for joining us. So as mentioned, there now seems to be a real expectation that the Energy White Paper will help provide a clearer roadmap to net zero. So from your perspective, what are the top things that the government needs to consider to fulfil the ambition to build back greener? And will the White Paper deliver? James, if I could come to you first, what is the CBI saying?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the introduction and, you know, summarise a lot of the key points. And I think it's worth thinking that, you know, we're at a period of a number of months, I think, where there are a lot of strategies due from government that are going to have a big, you know, bearing on net zero. You know, and in the Energy White Paper is probably the one that's been most sort of long overdue and is hopefully the one that will sort of come out first. But some other sort of key ones for our net zero kind of journey, including a decarbonisation of transport plan, a heat and building strategy, and then next year an industrial decarbonisation strategy, a hydrogen economy strategy, and then, as you said, hopefully tying all these things together is the sort of the overarching net zero strategy that's sort of, as you say, recently been promised. So it's going to be interesting to see how all these things knit together. And I think the Energy White Paper is going to have a role to kind of probably sort of set out some of the issues being assessed, and then that would allow some of those additional strategies to sort of, you know, kind of build out in more detail. A big question, and one that is yet to be answered, I think, is the relationship between the sort of the policy paper itself and the spending decisions that will sort of support what BEIS are trying to achieve. And it seems, kind of breaking news at the moment seems to be that we're going to have just a one-year CSR, comprehensive spending review, which could be an issue for sort of some of the things BEIS are trying to say, because they won't have the clarity around sort of, you know, the longer term spending options they have. So I think that sort of is an area of concern, but we would hope that at least bringing forward a CSR of whatever length would then sort of give the green light for things like the Energy White Paper to come forward. It is going to be pretty crucial, though. I think there are lots of areas where businesses are looking for certainty, and that the Energy White Paper can at least sort of show a path. And it's been a while. We've really had things like, you know, electricity market reform in place for quite a few years, with, you know, lots of success coming particularly from the CFD process, but also, you know, we've gone on a journey around the sort of the consumer energy market and the price cap and the evolution of that as well. So there's an opportunity to bring those sort of visions together, but also I think some key areas like kind of building sort of flexible energy markets are really key. You know, the last couple of years we've seen a lot of kind of new kind of services being developed, both for sort of, you know, domestic and business consumers, and, you know, how can the market stay, you know, kind of allow those kind of things to come through, but sort of maintain good competition. I think that's going to be a key one. You know, the how we kind of hit that 40 gigawatt offshore wind target that the Prime Minister sort of recommitted to at his party conference speech. We heard that there'll be a doubling of the cap on the next CFD auction round, but we're going to need to see actually what are those details. You know, is offshore wind going to sort of compete against other offshore wind projects in its own pot, or is it going to be versus any other technology? So how are they going to actually kind of do that, you know, and does that increase in the cap, does that just apply to offshore wind or other technologies? So, you know, we need that clarity to come through, and government has been sort of consulting on those rules, but I'd imagine that the results of that would come through alongside the Energy White Paper as well, to give business the certainty it needs, at least on that next auction round, and hopefully a bit of clarity around the future auction rounds that will come through the rest of the decade, because, you know, this is a critical decade for accelerating climate action. It's something the CBI has been sort of passionately calling for. You know, last year we called it a decade of delivery. You know, that was at the end of last year. We weren't expecting a global pandemic, but I think the importance, as you say, of a green recovery is really high on our agenda, and we've been pushing hard on that
And Ben, from your point of view?
Yeah, really, really interesting starting point and something that is very topical at the moment, obviously alongside COVID and COVID recovery. And I think what's clear, whether you're speaking to business, suppliers, technology, is that what's really missing at the moment isn't the commitment to get to net zero. It's the roadmap that's gonna help us to get there. You know, it's the what, how, when, who's going to pay for it questions. And you just mentioned that your business blueprint, the Road to Net Zero report that we've done recently with business, and that very much gave a feel of there's a real confidence around getting to net zero by 2050. And also, you know, it showed that, you know, 2/3 of businesses have already got a really decent plan around how they're going to get to. But I think what's missing is that really clear roadmap, those stepping stones that's going to tell industry, you know, how we're going to get there. And that really needs to come from the top, from the government. And therefore, there's huge expectations, I think, over the next 12 to 18 months, not only with the Energy White Paper, but as you say, heading towards COP26 in November 21. So some real expectation from the top. But some particular things that we're looking out for in the Energy White Paper and from policy that we're hearing from businesses is more government incentives to enable investment in low carbon technologies, for example. Yeah, so what are the price points that's going to increase that investability in technology? And that's clearly through government subsidies or market intervention to make sure that there's those price points to really encourage that investment. And of course, alongside that then becomes, well, how can we afford it? Yeah, so greater access to funding, for example, grants and loans, not just greater access, but I guess it's got to be really simple around how those funds get from government to business. And greater clarity on what would be expected of their business, you know, in the next, you know, 10, 20, 30 years. But also, you know, transparency and consistency in approach and standards when it comes to things like reporting on their emissions and sustainability initiatives. And whether that's just purely a focus on them or how much responsibility businesses have for their supply chains, for example. So I think some really kind of clear points that business and industry needs, and hopefully the Energy White Paper will go some way to addressing some of those points.
I think probably one other point on the Energy White Paper in particular, I think quite a few businesses from across the country are going to be looking for some clarity around the future of nuclear energy, particularly the debate around, you know, large-scale nuclear and small modular reactors. I think from a CBI perspective, we think we need both. We need all sorts of technologies to help us get to net zero. Nuclear plays an important role, and Hinkley Point C is well underway in terms of construction down in Somerset, and, you know, Sizewell would be a way of sort of replicating that design and doing so more cheaply. But there's a government decision to be made around the financing model for large-scale nuclear, but then also support for small modular reactors as well. So we'll need to see if government is able to kind of come forward and sort of support hopefully both those technologies. Again, we know we're operating on under sort of tight fiscal conditions given all the other government spending that government has had to do. So I'd say that's probably one of the other kind of big things that we're certainly looking for when that white paper does land.
So based on that, what are the key things businesses should look out for?
For me, it's all about investability. I think, you know, one of the real ways we're going to get to net zero is through technology in the electricity industry, perhaps making up for other industries that are going to potentially have a harder time getting there. I'm thinking things like aviation, agriculture, potentially kind of large energy intensive businesses. And therefore, there's a real kind of emphasis on the electricity industry to help get to net zero. And that's through moving towards a low carbon fuel mix, technologies, more wind, more solar, so more renewables. But it's got to be investable. There's got to be that incentive for both businesses, for financial institutions to kind of want to incentivize. And it's not just through generation. I think a lot of things are very topical at the moment, not just in terms of what technologies will help us to get to net zero by 2050, but also things that will help us like carbon capture and storage. and the two forms of that that are going to become quite prevalent. And also, a much talked about hydrogen strategy. But again, a lot of that becomes down to what is the strategy for hydrogen? I know the UK's potentially got that coming at the start of next year. But what are the big projects and who's going to fund those big projects to help get that off the ground? So, for me, that's kind of really interesting. Alongside just general energy policy, I think we've discussed it in our future energy scenarios earlier in this year around it does feel like energy policy is outdated. The white paper is urgently needed to get a handle on that and hopefully plot a successful roadmap to net zero. So yeah, a comprehensive investment strategy, what technologies we're going to use, what are the changes to policy going to be, and what are the expectations on businesses, but also kind of communities on kind of everyday users, how much can we rely on kind of behavioral change of the public, the business sector. And as I mentioned in my first answer, what are the expectations going to be in terms of reporting? So especially, a big concern of business in terms of, what the reporting expectations are going to be. What does that look like? What are the timing intervals going to be? Will it just be for them or for their supply chain? And of course, the elephant in the room for me and for a lot of people in this industry is who fits the bill for it. So who pays for that? And will that be by the energy bill, or will it be by a general taxation, be that business or personal? So a lot of questions I think that are hanging out there at the moment that industry is crying out for answers to.
It's a broad question and will probably mean a lot of different things to different sectors. I think though it's almost kind of going to kickstart that hopefully kind of sequence of strategies coming from government. And because we've just been in a hiatus now for really kind of quite a few months, and so many of our members are still kind of, they're still dealing with the pandemic firsthand, and it's clearly not going away, and in many cases sort of getting worse. So that is always sort of going to be there. But I think it's just the opportunity to sort of set that framework, because I think what I think you referenced sort of businesses sort of wanting to sort of have clarity on policy. We've done our own recent work on this, and actually sort of following on my kind of previous point around sort of galvanizing sort of business action ahead of COP26, we've created something called the Goal 13 platform, which we're doing with some other sort of CBI members. And so the aim of that is to kind of help companies sort of set their targets, but more so kind of learn from each other and sort of matchmake and sort of identify some of the key barriers. And the initial piece of that work was to do we interviews with around 100 companies to sort of understand what are their initiatives, what are the learnings, what are the barriers, sort of what are the what's helping kind of drive kind of corporate action. And unsurprisingly, one of the sort of clear findings was that sort of policy and regulation uncertainty is holding business back. We hear that verbally from members in individual conversations, but seeing that come through in a more kind of quantitative piece of analysis just shows that is a really important thing. So I think it's almost like not just what's in the paper, but just the fact that it's there, and it really kind of just sort of it can just kickstart decision making, both from in government but then from businesses as well.
James, you mentioned earlier about the CBI's Decade of Delivery report at the end of last year. Do you feel that still holds given the events of 2020?
Yeah, I think at the end of last year, if we're trying to sort of create a big picture and try and sort of help kind of government make some of those strategic decisions, it was trying to sort of say, look, we've made great progress on the power sector, but we're not there yet. There's a long way to go before we have sort of a truly low carbon power system. But hopefully by the time we get to 20 or 30 or so, we can imagine a system with very kind of high amounts of renewables on there, but hopefully kind of storage as well. Like I mentioned, Hinkley Point C, so hopefully kind of a new nuclear power station up and running at that point. Getting that power system right will underpin a net zero and low carbon economy. So that needs to be got right. But then really making progress on transport and heat and energy efficiency, as they are, in whichever way you can look at the economy, they are some of the largest emitting sort of sectors or sources of emissions. So they were ones where we really wanted to make progress. And I think even with the pandemic, those things remain the same. I mean, our deadline for net zero is still there, and obviously we've every month counts. and you know we've nearly used up sort of the first year of that of those three decades, and not a huge amount has been done, although clearly we saw some very positive funding on energy efficiency come forward from the Chancellor in the summer. But for us, you know, we really want to see kind of progress on accelerating renewable deployment. Like I said, to kind of make this sort of this decade count. Two kind of developing technologies, you know, we highlighted these as potential areas of interest back at the end of last year, which are CCUS and hydrogen. I think this year has seen quite a lot of progress on both those fronts. Certainly from a policy perspective around CCUS, you know, we're making progress on the sort of business models for the transport and storage, and you know the industrial clusters are sort of coming forward with their plans. So it feels like there's a real kind of head of steam there. And I think, you know, if you look at analysis from the Committee on Climate Change, you know that we're going to need carbon capture, use, and storage in a number of ways. So that's really important progress. But government has a strong role to play, as I say, in sort of setting those sort of business models up. And then the supportive market framework, such as sort of CFDs, to kind of help actually drive down costs. And then the same applies for hydrogen, which I think has probably been the most sort of probably one of the most kind of debated technologies, I think, in recent months, as there's a lot of interest now in hydrogen use across different sectors. We've seen sort of very significant funding commitments from the French and German governments as part of their kind of recovery packages, sort of between sort of 6 and 7 billion euros apiece. And I think there is probably some nervousness, I think, from our members that, you know, it's another potential example of us sort of, you know, missing out in an international race, and then us eventually having to kind of buy in sort of work from foreign companies to achieve our own net zero target. And then we see that now with offshore wind to quite a significant extent. So, you know, there's an industrial opportunity here. And I think, you know, just the pandemic just emphasizes the need to change even more rapidly and to look at these areas where we can deliver jobs. And the CBI has produced two reports sort of this summer, one on the principles of sort of the green economic recovery, and then one on actually, you know, what are the real kind of deadline decisions that the government needs to make. Because I think actually, you know, what we're hearing from a lot of our members, they're waiting to invest. You know, they're really ambitious. You know, there's huge, you know, huge sort of commercial opportunities here. But there is concern around sort of, you know, investing in the wrong technology, or perhaps, you know, another country might have a better investment environment. So we can need to sort of, you know, make those as positive as we can in the UK, and sort of actually there is a case for kind of swift government decisions, and almost sort of not trying to over-engineer the system. You know, don't sort of have to wait forever to create the perfect strategy, but actually just you know, create the conditions and let kind of the market deliver.
So with the Energy White Paper hopefully kicking off a round of new policies, there now seems to be a real countdown to COP26 next year. From a business perspective, what are the top strategies for the industry in achieving sustainability goals that the announced net zero strategy needs to address?
Yeah, well, I mean, clearly businesses are going to play a huge role in getting to net zero, and therefore it's really important that the government and industry does listen to the voice of business. And from the report that we've conducted, so your business blueprint, the road to net zero, I think it's quite clear that the businesses are worried about committing to, you know, quite steep targets when there really isn't a clear roadmap for them or an understanding on how we'll get there, especially when some of the technologies that are required just aren't available yet, or there just isn't that clarity on when they'll be available. So, you know, if for businesses that are very energy intensive and do rely very heavily on fossil fuels and do emit quite a bit of carbon, 30 years seems like a long time, but really time's of the essence to start developing those new and commercially viable technologies to help them to decarbonize. So again, all eyes on things like the hydrogen strategy that's due to be published early next year. And I think the UK's got a bit of catching up to do there. We've seen you know, France and others on the continent that have already announced their strategies and potentially a little bit ahead. So that'll definitely be in focus. But also, I think you've got to remember everything that the businesses and are having to experience at the moment in terms of the changing marketplace. So recovering from the impacts of COVID, which is obviously still ongoing. And that balance between obviously the focus on costs and cash at the moment for businesses, building back on the lost revenues potentially from this year versus, you know, net zero expectations that could also pressure the need to have the capex to invest in new energy efficiency technologies or the building of on-site generation. So there needs to be a focus on why investing in these measures makes long-term sense, commercial sense for businesses, whether that be sustainability or long-term operational resilience.
You know, there's already a lot of attention on businesses to be very clear around the targets they're setting, and I think that as a business organisation, we're very keen to avoid any accusations of greenwashing and things like that. So we want to sort of really kind of help our members going to make progress there. It's a bit of a focus for us ahead of sort of COP26 to sort of help kind of deliver the tools and help companies sort of learn from each other. So, you know, the best practices sort of put in place. But also just to kind of help sort of share knowledge, because there are a lot of different sort of carbon reporting mechanisms, lots of standards, lots of initiatives, whether it's for renewable energy or low carbon fleets for kind of recording carbon commitments. And there's a lot of stuff out there, so it's potentially a very confusing world for business as well. So there's an importance of kind of making it easy as much as it can be.
So with all that in mind, how can businesses, government and other stakeholders, say industry groups like the CBI, work better together to achieve net zero?
It's an important question. I think government, first of all, has to accept that it doesn't have all the answers, but also it doesn't need to have all the answers. You know, it doesn't need to sort of, you know, create a prescribed route. You know, it should sort of, but it should focus on sort of creating the conditions for a business to do the right thing. So I think sort of, you know, working together to identify where the barriers are. You know, for example, you know, we still have an incredibly outdated, you know, business rate system, and particularly, you know, for commercial businesses looking to either reduce their emissions through efficiency measures or installing, you know, solar panels or other kind of low carbon technologies. At the moment they get penalized for that, and you know that just seems sort of completely counter to the net zero target that we have. So that's one example. But then, you know, making sure that all our kind of regulators are making decisions that allow businesses to invest. You know, we've seen some decisions, say from Ofgem, for example, that quite a few parts of the energy industry are sort of now concerned around what that means for their investment strategies, which is sort of the RIIO-2 draft determinations. And that's sort of one example of some decisions that have sort of from the outset seem to sort of be a little bit sort of aggressive when it comes to our kind of net zero progress. So I think the key thing for me is can businesses, you know, through all the forums that they have available, whether that's sort of the CBI or other trade bodies or direct relationships with government, sort of help kind of identify where those barriers are, just to help kind of, you know, create the most positive investment environment there is. And I think there's plenty of evidence of that happening. Government seems very open to reaching out to businesses to create sort of councils that sort of can be technology focused. There's a new one on hydrogen, for example, that's helping to influence the hydrogen economy strategy. But then even in those circumstances, you run the risk of, you know, you have some people in the room and others aren't in there, and it can be, you know, you need to sort of get in as much information as you can. So there's definitely a balance to be made. But you know, I think that we're sort of in an uptick around sort of the positivity of government and business relations. And I think actually, you know, looking back at the pandemic, it's shown that business and government, when faced with a crisis, can come together and to deliver solutions. And you know, that's been apparent for COVID, but you know the climate crisis is one where we need to sort of take that take those learnings as well and make sure that those partnerships are pretty strong.
Yeah, I think for starters, it's that kind of understanding and acceptance that there is no silver bullet, and I think there is a feeling that all parties look to each other to provide that silver bullet or provide that momentum, and the reality is that it's got to be a combination of businesses, government, industry that work together, as you've just articulated, to achieve that. But I do think that it does start from the top in terms of government setting that roadmap. But clearly, everyone has an interest and a willingness to work together, and several recent studies have shown that it will present kind of numerous growth opportunities and potential new jobs through the Build Back Greener and incentivizing the green economy. And I think a recent report from London School of Economics, which estimates tens of thousands of jobs could be created through the kind of the road to net zero and the Building Back Greener. So there's real evidence there that I think working together could be beneficial for all parties. And I think the majority of the businesses we spoke to in the recent consultation report believe that their organisation will really benefit from changes during the net zero transition. So whether that's long term resiliency through saving money, reducing carbon emissions, reputational, not just for customers but also through the types of talent that they can hire into their business. But what we really need, what it still comes down to, is some really clear, bold and ambitious policy to help businesses to get there. So it's absolutely got to be a joint effort, but I do think there's a real responsibility on kind of government to set that roadmap.
Ben, you mentioned that businesses really do recognise the benefits of sustainability. So do you both believe that a focus on net zero presents an opportunity for businesses to gain a competitive advantage?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there are so many positive commercial benefits, and I mentioned the Goal 13 work that we've been doing, and that's highlighted a lot of those. I think from that research, the primary driver for climate initiatives was actually being driven by businesses, consumers, whether they be kind of B2C or B2B, and there is that demand there. So I think if you're from a business perspective, if you're not kind of looking for those opportunities, you're going to be left behind. Someone else is going to be there first, and it's such a growth area across so many sectors, different technologies. This is where it's sort of happening, and actually that I think that fact is something that is also kind of influencing businesses from a kind of a staff sort of hiring and retention kind of point of view, because we heard this before the pandemic through it and continuously that more and more people are asking when they come to interview at the company, what are your sustainability plans, and it's actually becoming a really important thing for people when they're planning their next career move, but then also for people currently employed, they want to be part of a business that is acting responsibly but then not just doing it for the sake of it, but because that, as you say, is a part of the long-term success for a business, both in terms of its the opportunities it has, but then, as you say, from its resilience too. So I think that kind of the role of people is already really important. But that's just going to keep growing. And I think as younger generations sort of come through as well, it's clearly a really, really high on the agenda. And that's an issue for people hiring. But then again, the leaders of the future will be the leaders of the present when we get to 2050, if not sooner. So there is going to be a shift in mindset as well. And I just think this will help them accelerate progress.
Ben, do you agree?
Yeah, I think so. So primarily, and I think what's still in focus is, let's be honest, is cost benefit, especially with what businesses are going through at the moment. And therefore, if there is the ability for having real targets to what net zero can improve long-term operational resiliency, really saving cost and reducing carbon emissions, and whether that's becoming more reliant by building self-generation, which removes your exposure to the national grid, or just improving your business processes behaviourally, but also technology-wise, that makes you use less energy and therefore saves you cost, it's going to be a good thing. But so then there needs to be a really clear payback for business, though. So that return on investment's got to be clear. Of course, but there are wider benefits as well that are going to go alongside that. And that's reputational. I think we're seeing a real change in kind of consciousness in the public eye of environmental impacts, and therefore, on a domestic, but also business front. And therefore, people are becoming much more vocal in terms of calling out bad behaviour or disingenuous promises. So there's absolutely kind of reputational benefits of having a really kind of firm green agenda, but also supply chain advantages. There's going to be increasing focus on businesses to reduce their scope 3 emissions, and therefore really important that businesses' supply chains are working hard to ensure that they're meeting their challenges and targets as well. And therefore, if you're not on this road to net zero, you risk losing that business of your supply chain, or if you're a kind of a smaller enterprise, not being able to participate in future contracts and tenders. But I mentioned earlier about attracting the right type of talent into your business. You know, I've heard a number of kind of large businesses across numerous sectors saying that they really don't think that they're going to attract the right or the best talent if they don't have really clear green agenda and targets. A number of things that I think benefits could bring to business if they do have a clear net zero agenda. But of course, focus is going to be on the bottom line as we recover from COVID.
So, bearing in mind these benefits that we've discussed, what are businesses telling you about their sustainability plans and objectives? So is it still a priority, and is there a belief that government policy will actually deliver what they need?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's certainly a priority, and you know, we've discussed some of the reasons why that is, and even despite the pandemic, you know, those are not going to go away, and they're going to keep increasing. I think there's a definite challenge around business information and knowing what to do, and we're seeing quite a spread of initiatives. It's interesting to see what is driving those. I mentioned the important role of consumers, but there's a clear role for kind of for business leadership. You know, this needs to be if it's owned by the CEO or other sort of board members, you're going to have a much sort of stronger chance of sort of getting this through. So that slightly kind of relies on individuals to take that leadership role. So we know we'd be keen to see kind of every board, you know, kind of take on, you know, kind of climate as, you know, as a key priority. You know, and then you can even go down the route of, you know, ensuring that sort of, you know, workers at that level are rewarded for their achievements when it comes to sort of climate and carbon reduction.
Is there the confidence? I think that's still to be decided. I actually think there's a little bit of skepticism around whether they have, businesses have the confidence that the government's going to develop a realistic plan to achieve targets by 2050, and that's why things like the energy white paper are so important. But having said that, you know, we speak to a lot of businesses, both public and private sector, that already have really kind of clear plans or ambitions, certainly to start being early adopters and really pushing towards becoming a kind of a cleaner business, and that could be I guess across a number of formats, whether that's just looking at energy efficiency across their business, or whether that's kind of in investing in on-site generation or renewable generation, looking at EVs as part of their strategy, whether that's their fleet of vehicles or charging points. And actually, a lot of businesses that we're hearing are doing these activities are funding them themselves. So 58% of businesses using their own capital to do that. But as we mentioned before, you know, businesses are facing increased pressure on finances, and therefore, you know, they're looking for a number of things, and that comes in a number of guises. So government incentives, I think we mentioned earlier, to enable investment in low carbon technologies, be that subsidies or market intervention to provide those price points for that much needed flexibility that we're going to need when the wind's not blowing and the sun's not shining. Really clear and much better access to funding, whether that's grants or loans. As we talked about earlier in the first answer around, you know, what are the expectations on businesses, and when will those expectations really kind of begin to take hold? Things like reporting becomes even more important for businesses, so they really go into this with their eyes wide open. But again, yeah, whether there's that real confidence from business, I think is debatable at the moment, and therefore, you know, all eyes to the next 6 months or so.
From the regulatory side, though, I don't think any business would sort of say, "Oh yeah, we trust the government implicitly to sort of get this right," because it's always going to be a journey. We're always going to be refining this. But as you say, if we have sort of stronger kind of business and government partnerships, and that's only going to sort of help that process. But I think there's still quite a mix of, you know, like I said, that challenge around business information. There's a huge mix of initiatives. Some companies really kind of, you know, blazing a trail, but others trying to sort of catch up and learn from that. So I think there's still we're seeing quite, you know, in our work, a lot of divergence of where some climate plans are But I think, I think as we get towards COP26, that's a real kind of deadline for a lot of companies to sort of get their plans in place. And we've got things like the, this is an international campaign, but the, the Race to Zero campaign, which is being led by the UN, and Nigel Topping, the UN's COP26 climate champion, that's trying to sort of get businesses and regions and cities to sign up, both with sort of initial kind of commitments, but then commitments that by the time we get to COP26 need to be backed up by actual kind of plans that are being put in place.
James, you touched on the need for strong leadership. So do you feel that sustainability is now a board level issue, or is it still a challenge to get it recognised?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things we've learned in our interviews and work with members is that there is, if sustainability and carbon reduction is sort of siloed in one part of the business, that makes it so much harder to make change. So I think, it definitely needs to be sort of set at the board level, because then you're going to stand a better chance of it filtering down throughout the business. But then I think that there shouldn't be barriers to that, because, like I said, the demand for employees to sort of feel they're empowered to act on climate change is something that's sort of growing and will keep growing. And then I think that's going to make any attempts from corporate leaders to kind of embed climate action across the business something that is sort of is welcomed. But then if it's not done in time, will end up sort of being demanded. So, but in the short term, it is around making sure that you are kind of drawing those links across the business, and that it's not just sort of stuck in one part, because that's just only going to sort of slow progress. And support employee action across the business if you can share it out and democratize it to some extent.
Finally, from both of you, just to summarize, if you had a blank sheet of paper, what would be the top things that you believe need to be addressed in the energy white paper? Ben, if I could come to you first on this one.
For me, obviously passionate about wholesale markets and for energy, we're already starting to see a huge transition away from fossil fuels, a real kind of growth in variable renewable generation, and that really needs to kind of increase if we're going to hit our net zero targets. And therefore, for me, I'm really interested to kind of see what technologies the government really kind of puts at the heart of its kind of net zero strategy. Hopefully the energy white paper will give real clarity on types of technology and how they're going to make sure, as I mentioned earlier, there's clear investor signals to be able to continue to invest in those technologies, because I don't think the wholesale market provides that, and therefore we are going to be reliant on subsidies or kind of initiatives to keep driving that and the wider technology in terms of the wholesale market. So carbon capture and storage and hydrogen that we mentioned earlier as well, there needs to be a kind of real with clarity on strategy in terms of how and when and who's going to fund those types of projects. So that's key for me. And then if you look for business, again, it's around the expectations. It's the timing. It's the reporting that I think is really important. And again, the access to funds in what is a difficult time financially for many businesses. So I think they'll be the two clear things for me. But I think wrapping all of that is got to be some confidence that this is at the heart of government priorities, and therefore we've seen some future scenarios from National Grid. We had a decarbonisation plan from Ofgem, which is great, but all kind of really high level in terms of what the art of the possible is and what could provide the solutions. I think now's the time to start putting some real stepping stones, some dates, some roadmaps, some real confidence behind technologies, and that's got to come from the top. So for me, it's clarity that's going to help underpin those first two things that I mentioned.
Yeah, I think first of all, I just want to have a really clear vision from government about what's driving change, because the last decade we have the energy trilemma, so cost, security of supply and carbon reduction, and we clearly moved beyond that. We've got things like the 4Ds framework, so decarbonisation, decentralisation, digitisation and democratisation. But then what do these things actually mean? So can we have at least some kind of framing from government around sort of what they're trying to achieve and the goals we're working to. So I think that's probably sort of point number one. I think how we accelerate a flexible energy system that all kind of businesses and consumers can take part in. I think that's probably the next one, because that feels where there's, you know, that's where the technology is, and I feel that's where I'd be concerned that sort of policy and regulation might hold us back. And then finally, just again, you know, the concrete kind of policy decisions needed to accelerate our kind of low carbon power generation. So like I said earlier on, the need to kind of be clear around the future auctions for all types of renewables, but obviously kind of trying to hit that offshore wind target, but then like decisions on nuclear as well, which a lot of businesses are sort of waiting on. So that, you know, that low carbon power bit, which I think is going to be crucial for the success of the white paper.
Well, thank you both for taking the time to talk to us. There's some really interesting points raised, and what has come through loud and clear as we await the publication of the Energy White Paper is that businesses need policy certainty to know how and where to invest to make their sustainability ambitions a reality. For advice and information on how Empower Business Solutions can help your business on its road to net zero, please visit www.energy-hq.co.uk or join the conversation using the hashtag #RoadToNetZero.